Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for February 16, 2014. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me this week, right now, is our frequent co-host, but first time as Rome City Commissioner being a co-host on the Kudzu Vine. Welcome back, Wendy Davis.
Thank you so much for having me, David, and it is a very exciting time in my life. Yep.
Yeah, and we'll get into that. And, of course, I'm so glad you're on right now, because if you weren't, I'd be talking to myself. I think Catherine has been baking cookies. You said that that was kind of a public knowledge thing through social media, so we're not giving away any secrets.
There was an event she was attending that she had baked some cookies for, so I expect she'll be joining us shortly.
Yeah, I have no news otherwise, so... You know, I was going to say, it doesn't sound like she's pulling a batch out of the oven at the moment, but, you know, she'll probably be dropping here any minute. But until then, we'll get into discussion with you. And, Wendy, I guess let's just start off with that. You know, you came on when you're running for city commission. You won. You ran in a field of, I believe, five people. Top three got it. And you were the second leading vote getter and just a few votes from being the top getting vote getter. And just so folks will know, the person who was the top getting vote getter had been on the commission like 20 years, is now the mayor. So, I mean, considering you were the non-incumbent, quite a race.
Yeah, it was kind of exciting, a little bit odd, as you mentioned, the sort of the vote for three situation. There were three seats in Ward 2 here in Rome that were up to in 13, gosh, I get all my numbers mixed up when the year changes on me. But they could vote for up to three candidates. And it's very unusual to be able to be a non-incumbent and be able to be successful when there are three incumbents running. And but I was able to do that. And I think it's a credit to my campaign team and to the wonderful support I had from folks who I have met and known through my political career, and also a lot of new people who got involved in Rome City elections who had never really been involved before. So it was a nice coalition, and I'm very honored to have been elected and having a fun time serving so far.
Yes, and so you've been on the commission about a month, give or take a few days. How's that been? How many meetings have you had?
We meet the second and the fourth Monday. And so I have now had three city commission meetings that I have been in attendance for. I also am on a number of committees of the commission, right? So I've done a lot of that. So I'm kind of getting in the swing of things. I'm actually all the commissioners chair a committee, and it will not shock anyone that the new gal got the water and sewer committee. To chair, and I'm really excited also because I'm on the General Administration Committee, which sounds a little bit boring, but that's where the kind of, you know, routine things that the city has to take care of come through, and those are the kind of things where I feel like I can inject a little innovation into things, so I'm excited about that. I am also on the Public Safety Committee, and we know that that's, you know, dealing with all of our police and fire and first responders is an important thing that the city handles and manages, and we have a great crew here in Rome that do terrific work there. I am also on the Alcohol Control Commission, which is a little bit unusual. I don't know that every city has something like that, but basically that's the avenue for people applying to get an alcohol pouring license, right, or selling license, and also where if there are problems or violations that come up, they go through there. So there's a violation of our noise ordinance at a facility that sells alcohol that's coming before us at our meeting tomorrow night. So that'll be my first my first Alcohol Control Commission meeting. So those are sometimes pretty exciting. And then I also, the city has one representative on the County Board of Health, and I was able to get that seat. So I'm really excited about seeing what I can do there.
Yes, and I guess now are you involved in any way with Parks and Recreation? Of course, you know, everybody loves the show, but in Rome, Floyd County, it's, I guess, made the most news of all the city aspects or county aspects because it's had a budget shortfall. Are you involved in any way on that, and what can you tell us?
You know, the Parks and Recreation in our community is a separate authority, right, that the city and the county have, you know, a lot of facilities that, you know, the city owns some and the county owns some, and the authority manages everything. But the budget for it comes out of the county commission. So the Parks and Rec didn't necessarily have a shortfall, but when the county was putting their budget together, as a whole, the county had a shortfall, and they decided that the bulk of the budget cuts to make up for that deficit should come from Parks and Rec and should come from the library. And so that was a decision the county commissioners made, not the city commissioners. And I did, you know, I did not envy the position they were in, but they have made some pretty drastic cuts to the Parks and Rec budget and to the library's budget. So we'll have to see how the authority and how the library manage making those cuts.
Yes, and I know the library has shorter hours than any time since I've lived in Rome. They're closed whole days now, I guess on Friday and Sunday, in which
right.
I believe they used to not be closed any day. They had very short hours on Sunday, but at least a few hours after, I guess, between church, if you will, and never closed on Fridays. So I guess Friday's not a day for reading anymore. And
it's a real shame because, yeah, I think Catherine's with us.
Yes, I am. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, hope your cookies turned out well. I tell you what, Catherine, why don't I let you ask Wendy any questions about being on the city commission after I let Wendy finish her thoughts since I kind of broke in on the library. Wendy, did you have something to finish?
Sure. I just was going to say that, you know, the library, it looked like they were going to ask them to absorb $100,000 worth of cuts in addition to the cuts they have had year after year. And then they ended up figuring out that they had made some sort of accounting mistake, and they really only needed them to make $50,000 worth of cuts, so which is still going to be very difficult for them to absorb without losing more staff or cutting back the hours more. And it didn't feel to me like people were, that the county folks were really thinking through the fact that facility does serve so many people in our community, especially children. It's got a great computer lab, you know, where a lot of people who don't have, you know, the luxury of having access at their home come to do job searches and, you know, really important things. And like I said, I guess I'm glad I wasn't in that hot seat. We did our budget and for the city before I came on the commission. They take care of that in the fall for the following year. And our budget, they just didn't raise the property taxes at all and balance the budget without significant cuts, and we're able to do some raises for our employees, which is important.
Yeah, well, that's good. Catherine, any questions on Wendy being on the city commission now?
No, but it sounds great, Wendy. I'm so happy for you, and I know that you'll do a great job, and it's great to hear about all the ways that you'll be working with the community, and I'm just very happy for you and very happy for the county to have you.
Well, thank you. I
yes.
appreciate that, Catherine. Let me mention one thing. You know, what they say about politicians making promises, I want to make sure people know that I did make a particularly very specific campaign promise that I have already been able to keep, which is the City of Rome is now has a Facebook and a Twitter feed. So we're getting there. We're getting there. It's about time. City of Rome GA on both. So, again, just trying to be more proactive and more engaged with the public. That's really something I campaigned really hard on and is very important to me, and it seems like something that ought to be pretty easy to do.
Yeah, well, good deal. Let's go ahead and kind of, you've got more roles. You've been on the DNC for a while now and the DPG for years in different capacities. And I guess we'll start off because the DPG had a meeting, I guess, just last weekend. But not just that meeting, but DeBose Porter's been the chair now for a few months. He's put in a executive director, Rebecca DeHart. What seems to be the difference, or what's going on with the state party, in particular contrasting to, say, a year ago this time?
Well, goodness gracious, the contrasts are plentiful. it doesn't feel like there's going to be a riot on a daily basis, so that's good. Chairman Porter really has done, came in, as you know, some people know, we were, the party was in a hole. Frankly, when the transition happened, we were in a place where we really weren't sure we're going to be able to make payroll. It took some people stepping up and writing some big checks really fast to get us solvent, frankly. And then he, from that hole, Chairman Porter has been able to raise, by the end of the year, I believe our report showed that he had raised $200,000 and got us back out of the hole. Things were moving in the right direction. Donors were reengaging with the party. He was able to hire an executive director, and she's been able to add some more staff and, you know, clarify what some roles are and keep things moving forward the way we need them to be. Now that it looks like 2014 is going to be a much more exciting election year statewide than we had ever anticipated here in Georgia. So I'm proud of the progress we've made in a short time. Catherine, would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I also have to say that in her whatever 60-day term as interim chair, Nikema Williams raised some money and brought some more people to the table that had been away from the table for a while. So I think, while I absolutely agree that DeBose Porter has done a great job, Nikema also really stepped up in the brief time that she was there as well.
That was a ridiculous oversight on my part, and I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Usually
no.
It was Nikema who got us out of the immediate hole and really put more time and energy in than anyone would have asked of her or expected, and really, really did a great job as interim. You're absolutely right.
Yes, well,
And it looks like things are. Even that meeting last week, everybody was happier. Everybody was getting along in a better way than I've seen in a long time, I think. Though I was upstairs counting most of the time, so I can't say everything.
Well, it did, and I know all of us were. You know, David, a lot of people might not realize this, but when you're the way our process works, we were electing a new member to represent Georgia on the Democrat National Committee because DeBose Porter had previously been a DNC member and now is chair, was a DNC member because he's chair. So basically we needed to replace him as a representative to the DNC. And I believe I'm remembering right, there were 7 candidates, and so we were all sort of dreading how the day would go, because you have to receive a majority, and with 7 candidates, you're likely going to do the plurality on the first ballot, and then you knock one person off, there's a second ballot, then you knock one person off in the third ballot, and we were all sitting there dreading how long a day it could be. But actually, folks, Catherine, we ended up with 3 rounds of balloting, I think it was?
3 rounds,
you were up
yep.
there counting. And folks, more than one person, you know, one person was obligated to be struck, but each round, more than one person stepped away realizing that they, you know, didn't have the votes to be competitive. So we ended up selecting State Representative Pam Stevenson as our new DNC representative. So looking forward to working with her on the DNC.
Yes. Well, let's go ahead, before we get into DNC, because you're on that body as well, let's talk about this article in Politico, and it said the last call for state parties. And we've talked about the problems in Georgia. We've talked about the problems in Alabama with fundraising. But apparently, you know, Politico's looked at it, and they said because of outside, you know, PACs coming in and raising so much money, and I think even in Georgia there's been some groups, you know, Better Georgia and whatnot, it says that state parties have really been impacted and really a negative way. Wendy, do you think this is true, or how should state parties respond to the growth of PACs that not only work nationally but will actually come into certain states?
Well, it's from my point of view, it's unfortunate and very true what they're talking about. If you think about sort of the way that one of the primary roles that the state party has traditionally filled is being sort of a repository for a lot of that sort of bigger money, right, that would come into campaigns and then be directed toward voter contact efforts. That was sort of the traditional model, right? And you were limited in how much you could give the campaign, but you could give the state party a lot, right? So the state party became sort of a mechanism for a lot of that outreach. Well, with all the changes in campaign finance, the state party really has, in a lot of ways, really stinking complicated rules and regulations of the hard money and the soft money and, you know, what can be spent where and, you know, what kind of coordination there can and can't happen. And so a lot of times, frankly, it's just easier, you know, what does it take? It takes, you know, a few pieces of paper to start your own pack these days, right? So, you know, folks can go in and just create their own pack and put all that money there. And gosh, the way the campaign finance is now, a lot of those packs, you don't, you know, they have this, you know, people for a great Georgia, you know, kind of name. You don't know who they are. You don't know where their money came from. But they're out there transforming elections, and that's happening all across the country. And it does concern me a great deal.
Yes. Of course, Catherine, you've served on the state committee in different capacities and executive committees at times. Any thoughts on this article and how it relates to state parties?
Well, I'm going to actually disagree with Wendy, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Wendy.
Well, that's all right. It's fair enough.
I think that oftentimes people have particular interests that they want to support, whether it's environmental concerns or sometimes it's a broader, more like, say, a progressive agenda that they're concerned about. And I think there's a lot of people who don't necessarily want to support a whole party's ticket, but they want to support the values that are supported by some of a set of candidates in a party. And so I think these PACs and super PACs give people that may not have been interested in supporting the party a way to support candidates and values that are important to them. And while it may seem like it's drawing money away from the parties, and I think that to a certain extent it does, but I think it's more it provides more opportunities for people to contribute money. Whether, you know, there's a whole series of issues, whether it's, you know, I'm familiar with, like, women's health and reproductive issues. So, you know, there's a lot of people that might not support the Democratic Party, but they support, you know, Planned Parenthood, Feminist Women's Health Center, NARAL, SPARC, whatever the, you know, organization is, that stand up for those issues. Or, you know, Georgia Equality that looks out for marriage equality and LGBT rights. And there's other organizations that do that. So I think that while it may seem like, I mean, I think that I just think it gives people more opportunities to support things that they might not have supported before. And I also think that considering the fact that we had so much trouble in the Democratic Party in the last couple of years, that we lost a lot, I think it's a mistake to blame the fact that the party might not be raising as much money as they did 5 years ago on the PACs and super PACs. I think that's a little bit of a mistake, because I think that there were just a lot of people who were disappointed in the way the party was handling their money, and so they may have chosen to support candidates in other states or give directly to candidates. I don't think it was necessarily the PACs and super PACs that drew people away. I think it's a little bit more complicated than just tit for tat. Hmm.
Well, and it's okay to disagree at times.
It's wonderful to disagree. That's what makes the world go around, right?
That's why we're Democrats.
Especially if we can disagree agreeably, right? Isn't that what we
– right.
That's what I try to do. Not successfully all the time, but.
and typically what we do on the show at a lot of times as well. Well, and that kind of brings us in. You were mentioning the DNC. Now, you also serve on the DNC, and you go to meetings, I guess, quarterly on that. Any news that's going on the DNC level?
Actually, there's a DNC meeting coming up at the end of this month up in Washington, and they just announced a couple of days ago that the President Obama is actually going to address the DNC at this meeting, and which hasn't happened since I've been serving, unless you count the convention, where he obviously addressed the convention, and we were lucky enough to be there. And then the part that makes me just stomp my foot a moment is, unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss this DNC meeting because, being a newly elected official, I'm required to go to a training in Athens the same weekend. So I'm having an unfortunate conflict of my two roles there.
Yeah, and that happens, and obviously you've got to do what's best for your constituents since you're an elected official now.
Well, right, and it's also a requirement to do the training. I'm excited and thrilled to do the training and love that kind of opportunity, but it is actually a state law that it's required of all newly elected officials to attend this thing.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm sure that'll be informative, and at some point you can tell us if there was any exciting things you learned out of that. Well, Catherine, any questions you have about the DNC before we move on to the next topic?
I don't think I do. I think
we've been so cordial. I think we need to stir the pot a little bit and bring something totally different to the show. And as I was researching and looking up, topics for the show, I found this article on CNN Money that this fellow that's a, venture capitalist, I believe is his term, he has his idea. And he believes that the rich should get more votes. Now, not only, he says, for starters, that you should have to pay taxes to get to vote. Of course, I know what he probably means by that is property taxes or a certain amount of income tax or something like that, because I would argue that even a homeless fellow that gets donated some money, somebody gives some money and he goes into McDonald's and buys a cup of coffee, he pays sales tax. Somebody that rents their house, they probably end up paying the part of the property tax in their rent check every month. So I think people don't realize that pretty much everybody in society pays taxes, even if you don't pay property tax or income tax directly. But he actually then gets real controversial and takes it another level and says, well, the more you pay in taxes, the more votes you should have. And this would be a complete oligarchy based on wealth. Anybody, went with this. You hear, every once in a while, I think there's a lot of ultra-conservatives that dance around something like this, but I've yet to hear anybody put out this idea in such a big way. Is this thing going anywhere, or do you think maybe some of the Tea Party elements could grab a hold of this and give this thing more legs, Catherine?
I'm speechless when I read about this. I've read about this a couple of times. I would like to see them, go ahead and, try to push that. I think it's ridiculous. I would say that if anybody should get more votes in this country, it's teachers and children. Dave,
yeah,
I think you should get two votes.
Well, and actually, I'll be okay with one. I mean, and obviously, the concept of one man, one person, one vote, should be the rule. That's how democracy functions. Because, everybody, if everybody gets one vote for their citizenship, and you have to have some cutoff. Obviously, if you gave a 5-year-old a vote, they'd probably just do what their parents, told them to do. I mean, we have 18-year vote. I mean,
I was being facetious, but
or something. Yeah. Well, and obviously people can say firefighters, policemen, whatever it is. But I think when we start delving into a lot of different people, if people do their job in the right way, all jobs are valuable to society. So therefore, you know, one person, one vote's a pretty good baseline for me. Wendy, you know, you being elected official, I guess this could affect you in some way. What do you make of it?
I'm with Catherine. When I first read it, I was like, what? But the unfortunate thing is that's just sort of in a twisted way, sort of a logical conclusion of what a lot of people are advocating. I mean, not directly, you pay more taxes, you get more votes, but there are a lot of people who are very comfortable with these new impediments that are returning to voting, right? So what the heck? Why not add a poll tax back in, which is basically what this guy is asking for. And the thing that just baffles me is, frankly, that the number of people I imagine would kind of in their heart agree with this guy. In some ways, I hope somebody does push it so we could hopefully rouse some people up to see that we're going in the wrong direction in a lot of ways. But again, the dangerous thing is that mine and Catherine's first reaction was just unbelievable and almost just like a guffaw, right? What the heck? But unfortunately, these kind of things are out there, and if we're not careful, they can gain traction and just take us in what, in my mind, is the wrong direction.
Yeah, and I don't know how constitutional something like this would be. Here's the thing. Do I think there's any chance of this passing in the United States on a national level? Absolutely not. But when you look at some of their proposals that the ultra-right comes up with, and then you see states in the South like Alabama and Georgia and South Carolina and, you know, Mississippi, and you see how a lot of these crazy things can get legs in those states, I could see a state in the South with a super Republican majority, you know, trying to put some of the, like, something like this in the state level. I mean, that,
yep, and
does,
they don't have to go through justice anymore, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and then you, and of course, then it wouldn't be based on race, so it's not related to, you know, some of those things. But then, is it constitutional? And while you go through that, you might have an election or two where you'd have such a crazy system, and then it'd probably push people off the voter rolls, and then they have to go back and get back on the voter rolls, because I do believe this will be struck down as unconstitutional. But it's just crazy that this guy says this. I know nothing about this guy, his political leanings. I mean, who he is, he donated money to folks, you know, and you know, I mean,
well,
just say that he
read,
Go ahead, Wendy.
Well,
no,
the article
ahead,
I read said he was like, you know, he was worried about this attack on the 1%. He's like, well, right now it's the 1%, but soon it'll be after the 5%. Then it'll be after the 10%. And where will it stop? He was, you know, he was worried that, you know, the people who really have undue influence in a lot of very tangible ways were going to be brought down. And so he was trying to, you know, find ways to reinforce their power as he sees they ought to have it, because he feels like they're under attack in America right now.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was in San Francisco, not really a hotbed of conservatism, where he made his statements. But it'd be interesting to see if this guy gets more attention in a lot of you know, arenas, if you will, after he says, you know, these kind of things. So I guess we'll see if there's follow-ups on him or not. But, you know, he's – I don't know if he's had these ideas before. It's something he's just cooked up. But, I mean, it does have its foundations in the old only landed property owners can vote. But this is taking it to an extreme in which people in the 1700s weren't really, you know, I guess even comfortable with.
I mean, David, it's, you know, another thing it's sort of similar to, and again, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but there is a really strong national movement to repeal the amendment that allows for direct election of senators, right? They think that power ought to go back to the state legislature because the state legislators know better than individual voters, or because then it would make Congress more beholden to the states, or I don't know. But, again, there's a lot of movement in the wrong direction in terms of our democracy.
There was a bill about that in the Georgia legislature last year. I don't know if it ever came back this year. I haven't looked, but it was in there last year. And, of course, we voted for, I mean, we were the first state just, 10 days ago to vote in favor of a constitutional, you know, Amendment 5 constitutional, Article 5 constitutional convention in Georgia because of the federal debt and deficit. So they couldn't figure out which one they were voting about.
Yeah. I mean,
they used them interchangeably.
If you look at, you know, some states that have super majorities of people that might agree with Tom Perkins, you can see where this comes in. By the way, I ended up Googling him. There was three of them that have Wikipedia entries, but this guy, I didn't realize this. He is actually, he was married at one time to Danielle Steele and published his own romance novel, Sex and the Single Zillionaire. He's not worth a zillion. He's only worth $8 billion. So maybe the zillionaires look down on him since he's only just a measly billionaire. And then he wrote an article in January talking about the progressive war on the American 1%, and he compared it to Nazis Germany's oppression of Jews and the Holocaust. I mean, yeah, I don't know that anybody's coming after them with gas chambers, but I guess they can vote against that with their, you know, 8 billion votes or whatever he wants them to have. So this guy, he's a really interesting character, if you will. But maybe he'll, you know, moderate some of his political ideas or take up new causes besides this one, because this one looks like it's, you know, would shake the very foundations of modern democracy if enacted. Well, speaking of modern democracy, an election we've talked about on the Cudsley Vine for the last few weeks has been the special congressional election in Tampa Bay. There was a new poll showing that Alex Sink was actually leading this week. Of course, Catherine, I talked about how there was a poll that showed it a margin of error race, and I think even one had Alex Sink down. They did a new poll, and she's up. But we know that you'd have to get inside those numbers to even begin to tell which one might be right or wrong. But on Meet the Press and Chuck Todd, they were invited to have on an NBC debate, and Alex Sink said no, which is, we know that a lot of the high-profile Senate races will have debates on Meet the Press and on NBC. So it seems like it would be a way for Alex Sink to get a lot of attention on a national stage, but she turned it down. When do you think this was a good move for her? Or
I think the motivation makes sense because Alex is her campaign. She is trying to make the campaign about local Tampa Bay issues, right? And the national issues are where she feels she is vulnerable and where she's being attacked by all this special interest money that is swooping into the district. So basically what happened is there was a series of local debates that the campaigns had agreed to, and NBC decided, you know, they would come somehow, either the Chamber of Commerce who was hosting it or the NBC, anyway, the connection was made there. Of course, the Chamber jumped at the chance for that sort of national attention. It makes sense, right? You want to publicize your area. Being national should be better. But the Sink campaign is wanting to keep it more local. So it'll be interesting to see if now it looks like she doesn't want to debate or something that can be very negative in the electorate, or how, you know, how this debate about the debates hurts her or helps her.
Yeah, Catherine, your take on this thing.
Well, you know, there's a lot there, there's a lot of levels to this. So the National Chamber of Commerce has already endorsed Jolly, her opponent. So here's the local Chamber of Commerce trying to push this this debate. So as if I were on her campaign staff, I would wonder about the wisdom of that. You know, here's, like, is this going to end up being a gotcha kind of moment? Also, you know, what, you know, Chuck Todd, you know, whatever, he's who he is, but he did say that her last campaign was the worst campaign in the country. So maybe he walks into this with a little bit of an edge. I'm not saying he does, but, you know, you might think that if you were a member of her campaign staff or if you were Alex Sink herself. So I think there's, plus all the things that Wendy said, I mean, I think there's a lot of understandable reasons that she would be reticent to agree to that debate.
Yes, and I guess there was, they had a moderator from one of the universities in Florida was suggested to be the moderator, and Alex Sink said she's fine with that, and I guess that goes back to Wendy's point about, you know, maybe been dealing more with Florida issues, which she's comfortable with, and then with Catherine's point, then if it's this lady, it won't be the guy that criticized her campaign. Although, you know, usually, I mean, I found Chuck Todd to be pretty fair, and he's kind of an analyst of the horse race, not necessarily, you know, the issues behind the horse race. And, you know, that was more of a comment on her campaign team.
Right, and I'm not saying, and I wasn't suggesting that Chuck Todd would walk into that with an attitude, but I can understand why if you were Alex Sink and Alex Sink's campaign, you might think, well, why would we let this guy who was so critical of us be the moderator for a debate that's organized by the chapter of an organization, a national organization that has already endorsed our opponent. Like, I mean, there's too many strikes against it to me.
Yeah. And obviously, well, I think we talked about she's lost twice running for governor, but this race seemed to, you know, suit the dynamics suited her better, if you will. Catherine? Wendy?
No, I think it was Wendy.
David. You know, one last point I'd like to make about it, too, is, you know, putting back on, you know, my strategist hat, right? In a lot of ways, going into this race, Alex was the front runner, right? And so, you know, the typical thing is, you know, she has a stronger name recognition, more people sort of have a feel for who she is. So the more broadly her opponent gets exposure, the better for her opponent, right? And there's sort of more risk for her. That's a pretty traditional, you know, the front runner or sort of the leading, the better known person tends to be more, frankly, more leery and more controlling of how those debate dynamics work out. So.
Yes. Well, you know, we'll continue to follow that campaign. I believe the election's in early March, so it's got, you know, just under a month to go. And, you know, it's one that I guess folks are watching because the district leans Democratic, even though it was held by a Republican. It'll mean a swing of a vote, bringing the Democratic Party closer to regaining the Speaker's gavel. But then if the Republicans do hold that race, it's a little more than a hold because Alex Sink won it when she ran for governor. President Obama won it both times he ran for president. So it's kind of a Democratic-leaning district with a Republican, which is a strange animal to have either way with these hyper-partisan districts that we have across the country. Well, let's move on to another story in another state. Just north of us in Chattanooga, there's a Volkswagen plant. And they had a vote to decide if the plant was going to become a union plant. And about 1,300-some-odd workers voted. And just by 87 votes, they turned down unionization under the United Auto Workers, which I guess was a bit of a surprise in that the Volkswagen facility said that they were fine if they unionized. I mean, they weren't necessarily, I guess, pro-union, but they were like, it's okay they didn't fight it tooth and nail publicly. I guess there was some folks in Tennessee that says, oh, well, if we go a union, including Senator Bob Corker, then there probably wouldn't be as many car plants built in Tennessee, and it would hurt the state and all this. Catherine, how surprised were you by this? You're from a union auto building state of Michigan.
Well, I wasn't particularly surprised, I guess, but I was very disappointed, and I think that Corker and, you know, the rest of Republicans in Tennessee were way out of line in some of the things they said, and it turned out they weren't true. You know, they said that if they agree to the union, then Volkswagen isn't going to open up the SUV plant in Tennessee. Well, Volkswagen came back and said, our plans for our SUV plant have nothing to do with whether or not this plant is unionized. Volkswagen was looking for the model that they use, which is called like a community, I can't remember what the phrase is.
Governing board, I believe.
Yeah, and they can't do that legally without a union in this country. So they needed a union in order to, you know, sort of have that kind of model. So, I mean, I think that it was clearly a case of, well, I shouldn't say clearly. It looked to me like it was a case of public pressure on potential union members to vote against the union for fear of not being able to continue, you know, that the work would not be available and long-lasting. That was my impression.
Yes, and I actually went back to the page. It's called a Works Council. Well, the Works Council is in quotation, so it could, you know, somewhere else include the word community. But that's what it said in the article. Wendy, what are your thoughts on this vote? 87 votes. I'm not sure if that lets it come back up for a vote down the road or what.
A year.
Look, I don't know if it struck any of the rest of any of the two of you as ironic, but all these free market believers that the Republicans usually are, this is a private company, an international company, that welcomed the opportunity for their employees to unionize. And the U.S. senator for that state told public lies. This isn't a shading of the truth. He told a flat-out lie. The company had to come correct. The state leaders threatened the incentives that Volkswagen was currently receiving and basically said, if you think you're going to expand, you will never get another penny of incentives from this state if you're going to be all unionized and everything. And, I mean, it's galling. It is absolutely galling that these folks who are all the time talking and calling people on our side socialists, right, for our intervention in the free market, what on earth did they just do? They just, with their rhetoric, had an impact on that company that could be very far-reaching.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy happens there, and I guess the fact that this was a European company, I think the way some, you know, European countries run really scare Republicans because people, you know, workers have certain privileges and rights, and citizens are afforded things like health care and certain leave time, and Republicans just are really against all this. I know when Bill Clinton, you know, had family medical leave, it was based on a European model, and that's been over 20 years ago. It's been popular, and Republicans just don't want any part of this, or at least the ultra-right Republicans. I won't say every single Republican, but a lot of the ones that seem to be the big thinkers in their party. Catherine, anything on the hypocrisy there?
Oh, yeah, Wendy's absolutely right. I mean, this is not the way free market, I mean, I don't think this is the way we've imagined free market to work. But their,
I mean, threats from
their
the
ideology
government,
got in the way of their,
literally, threats from the government.
Yeah, their ideology got in the way of their ideology.
Yeah,
I don't know any other way to say it. You know, their ideology, apparently their anti-union ideology is stronger than their free market ideology, it would appear.
Yeah, and remember, Bob Corker, he's the guy that beat Harold Ford Jr. by just a really small handful of votes, and he did it by, you know, making a lady appear clothless, even though she had clothes on. And so this is a guy that's really, he'll play by the rules he needs to play by to win. I guess, what was that, 2006 he won, and then he won re-election when he didn't have much of an opponent in 2012. I don't know what's happened to Tennessee recruitment, but this seems like about three straight races in which Tennessee Democrats really hadn't put up much opposition to, you know, if they don't find a candidate against Lamar Alexander, they didn't find one against Corker in 2012. The governor's race was not contested in a major way. It seems like controversial Tennessee Republicans, particularly Corker, they could find somebody in the state of Tennessee, which is not the most conservative in the South, to run against these guys. Am I missing something in Tennessee, Wendy, Catherine?
Well, I guess so. I mean, we must be missing something because they're not running.
Well,
they have the same problem.
Really,
their bench has been decimated. Their bench has been decimated in a similar way to how ours has.
Yeah.
But we found candidates. I mean, you know, Jason Carter or Michelle Nunn, even Roy Barnes. I mean, you know, those candidates that we've found to run, I mean, who ran first in governor, I mean, sorry, Senate last time. I mean, we've put up better candidates than they have. I mean, they keep the same Mark Clayton fellow, which I think is that real controversial guy. This guy keeps running and actually gets on the ballot there. I mean, right now, if you look for governor, which it's up this time, they really don't have an announced candidate that they truly want, because they don't want Mark Clayton. He was an embarrassment. They almost had to spend money to run against him instead of running for him. If you look at candidates to run for, against Mark, Lamar Alexander, they've got three guys with D's behind their, beside their name, but they're really not, you know, top shelf guys. I guess Terry Adams would be the main one, but and then Corker, I guess they've got another 4 years to find somebody. But it's really, their party is in bad shape. They have one congressional seat, I believe. No, they have two. They have the Memphis and they have the Nashville seat, but out of nine districts, they hold two. You know, just not a good situation up there in Tennessee. I guess we got to find us a better correspondent up there to come on and guest host with us to give us an idea what's going on. But maybe that's part of the problem. We have trouble finding folks from Tennessee to be on the show. And while we're not the movers and shakers of Tennessee politics by any means, it just seems like, you know, they somehow are related in some way, because you just don't see a lot of Democratic action up there. So something to look at. Let's go ahead and move out to a different state out in Texas. And Ted Cruz, we talk about him a lot. And nothing as interesting as the coloring book this week, Catherine. But there's a new article talking about how Ted Cruz is really just not that popular even in his own party. I guess a lot of folks have seen him. It's just somebody that wants to be on TV, wants to be in control. You know, he's tried to micromanage the House even though he's in the Senate. And he's really not even been in Washington a full 2 years, and he's doing all this. Wendy, I guess we've gotten, Catherine and I have had a lot of airtime talking about Ted Cruz. What's your take on the favorite Canadian Republican?
Well, I believe it's the article you mentioned in Politico. You know, he's it seems that the only thing he seems to care about is his agenda, even to the detriment of the party, even in a position of putting, you know, party leaders in awkward position, as he did this week with the debt ceiling. It's, you know, we've seen a lot of people like this in our day, but it seems that for a freshman senator, he seems to have a lot of, let's call it, nerve. and it just, I find it, again, galling and baffling, and it dovetails nicely into what the vice president said about there isn't really a Republican Party, right? There's not the leadership there. It's so splintered. I hope that means that the Democrats can take advantage of that being so splintered. But right now, it just leads to what's worse than gridlock in Washington? Because whatever is worse than gridlock, it's what we've got now.
Yeah, I mean, and Ted Cruz, I mean, there 2 years this guy, he won election 2 years ago, came out of nowhere, and he's in many ways the face of the party. Catherine, how scary is that?
It's very scary, and this business with the debt ceiling, you know, he was really trying to, I mean, he was trying to get that vote to not pass, and the House had already left, so it would have put us in a terrible situation as a country. Not the Democrats, not the Republicans, but the entire country. We would not have had the, you know, ability to meet our obligations. And for him to feel comfortable putting us in that position makes me really uncomfortable that he feels, you know, that his ideology is more important than, you know, the financial stability of the country.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny that he's from Texas, and I don't think he's really going to be that popular with a lot of Texans as time goes on. I think he's going to wear on them. He's going to be an embarrassment. But if you look at their most famous sports franchise, the Cowboys, a team that gets a lot of attention, and for the past decades had very little results. And I think that's a good analogy for Ted Cruz's career so far. He's got a ton of attention. And he really hasn't accomplished anything unless it's breaking things, like he tried to break the government. That's all he's been good for so far.
I think he's raised a lot of money for his own PAC, right? And, again, that article in Politico, I mean, just this, I cannot get this image out of my head. They talked about he was kind of standing around with his hands in his pockets, almost like he was like, whistling a happy tune. Look at the mess I've made. Woohoo! Aren't I the coolest kid in town? I know
with
violence
smirk
is
on
the
his
answer,
face,
but
right?
But it makes me want to slap that smirk off his face, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It almost makes me admire what Jim DeMint did. And Jim DeMint was someone we talked about a long time. And Jim DeMint kind of got bigger than the party, and his conservative ideology, would kind of hurt a lot of his fellow senators. Well, he decided he'd step away and he would run a pack and try to, you know, engineer a lot of policy within how the Republican Party functioned politically. But he's not doing it from a Senate seat, which is different. I mean, if you're, one of the folks that's directing things but you're not an elected official, that's, to me, different and more acceptable than somebody that's supposed to be the junior senator of Texas first and the, thought police of the Republican Party second, if at all. Does anybody see any kind of, like, how maybe this guy should take the Jim DeMint track instead of trying to be a senator from Texas?
Well, he wouldn't have much. I don't think he has the gravitas that, I mean, you know, say what you will about DeMint, you know, at least he – you know, he left his position, and now he's doing this. I don't see that who is Ted Cruz? I mean, he's the only reason he's getting any leverage whatsoever is because he was elected as a senator.
Yeah.
If he's not a senator.
Yeah, I mean, it's really strange. This guy has such an ego. I mean, it's kind of like when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor of Florida. People were like, well, you know, there's somebody the Republicans could run for president if the law was different, if the Constitution was different, because obviously he was a foreign-born citizen, and he's not eligible to run for president. It was kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, big Hollywood star, accepted this. Well, this guy, Ted Cruz, was born in Canada, and he's almost wanting to change, you know, the Constitution for himself. I mean, it's kind of in a way, it's like I'm bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger, which, I mean, not that just because Arnold Schwarzenegger is a bodybuilder and a movie star, he should have special roles either, but he was willing to accept this, and yet Ted Cruz, who's been around for like 2 years in the, you know, public arena, not, you know, 20, 30 years in the public consciousness, he wants things changed for him. Do y'all see that analogy in the Wendy, the ego, how big it is just based on that?
Yeah, and you didn't misspeak there, and I know it was just like a typo. He was governor of California, not Florida.
Yeah,
but
Florida.
I'm sorry.
But, no, again, it's like a typo. I'm surprised there's not yet a reality show, because that's what Senator Cruz reminds me of, you know, right? It's about personality. It's about media attention. It's about me, me, me. as Catherine said, he and his ilk really are willing to risk the full faith and credit of our country for to score political points. And it just baffles me. And it's I don't think how our let's play that. It's not how our founders envisioned the Senate operating. You know, really
yeah.
don't think that what? They thought it was the arena for statesmen, and that's the furthest thing from what Senator Cruz is.
Yes, in the last 4 minutes of our show here, we've got a caller, and I'm not sure if he wants to talk about or they want to talk about Ted Cruz or what have you. Caller, you're on the air on the Kudzu Vine.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the Kudzu Vine.
Hi, I have something to say about Barack Obama.
Okay.
Okay.
Barack Obama needs to stop throwing children's food away. I'm tired of it.
Okay.
It's really getting on my nerves.
I'm not sure when he did this. I know there was a policy. There was, I believe, a school in Utah that they took food of kids that owed lots of lunch money.
But it wasn't the president.
No.
And they threw it away,
understand.
But it wasn't the president. And really, the president doesn't have a lot of say in Utah. Not really a very
there
democratic
was an
state.
Oval Office party last week, Wednesday at 3 p.m. And when the kids came in, he would throw away the food. I read this on Yahoo.
Okay. Right.
Well,
why don't we do this? Why don't we put you on hold and we'll look that up and see if we can find any validity. I do not know about the Utah situation, but I don't know about this White House party at 3. You know, we get callers and sometimes they're, you know, really on point, want to talk about the topics we're talking about. And every once in a while, it's Gold Party Ron or, you know, the gentleman with this White House party. I mean, seriously, I do want to Google this at some point.
I'm looking it up right now.
To it. Look it up right now. But
let's talk about the school lunch thing. You want to talk about the school lunch thing, or should I just talk about how great Rome is?
And that was more, I mean, you know, a one school's decision. Now, of course, we have Jack Kingston that wants folks to, you know, clean the lunchrooms, you know, kids for their lunch money. But I was actually thinking, you had alluded to Joe Biden's statement. He had a political speech this past week in Maryland, and he said there, you know, there really isn't a Republican Party. Now, that probably is going too far. I guess what he means is, you know, the Republican Party is known for being disciplined and organized. You know, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. Well, you know, Republicans aren't falling in line.
Well, David, sorry for the interruption, but the context really was that the legislative leaders, they can't even sit down and negotiate with a Republican leader and know that when they have a deal from that negotiation table, that leader can deliver on that deal. And that was really the context where he's saying that. Like, you can't do that. They're powerless. Their leaders can't even really make a deal in a traditional way that legislators, you know, get together and hash things out, like in a conference committee between the House and the Senate. They lack the leadership. There isn't a Republican Party, and he again showed the fact that there were 3 or 4 quote Republican responses to the President's State of the Union as a, you know, just an example of that.
Yeah. It's, you know, kind of crazy to see how disorganized they are. I think a lot of folks consider, you know, talk radio, in particular Rush Limbaugh, you know, when he speaks, a lot of the Republican Party follows. And so I know where the Vice President's coming from. Obviously, it's a little bit of a, I guess, like I said, an overstatement. So there's no party, but we shall see. Catherine, I did a little search like you did, and I came up with the same Utah story. I did see something about New Jersey, which I wasn't familiar with, but I tried to put in some terms to be fair. You know, White House, Obama, with throwing kids' lunches away. Nothing came up. Catherine, did you find anything?
I did not find anything, and I'm even trying to look at the schedule for the White House on the 12th,
well,
and I don't see it.
We tried. We'll tell the caller we tried. If the caller, if you want to message us, email us through our Facebook page, Kudzu Vine Radio. If you want to, I'm sure on the Blog Talk Radio page, there's a way to send us information. I know there's a chat. Feel free to send us the article. I mean, if you can find the article, we'll be glad to discuss it next week. So that's our challenge to you. Send us the article link. And if you send us a legit article link from, you know, a reputable source, we will make it topic number one. Catherine, do we agree to that?
Absolutely.
Well, you have our commitment. So until next week, when we might be discussing this story, this has been the Cudzu Vine. Thanks again for Wendy Davis.
Thank you, Wendy. Good to talk to you.
Always good talking to
everybody.
To you, thanks. Good night.
Good evening.
We are the heirs of that first.